Never eat four all day food.
I feel like that's one of those rules that's so easy to follow that you almost never need to say it.
You'd think.
Unless there's a story. What'd you do to yourself?
I ate something that was in the fridge.
You should know better than that. The fridge holds nothing us.
It smells like compost in there. Everyone thinks
smell
I'm crazy.
A thing.
It smells like compost.
Everything is future compost.
Yeah.
Thanks, Liam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I don't know. I ate 5-day-old food today, and I'm fine.
Yeah, what? It depends what it was. Like,
who the hell is that? Who's that?
Who's what? This weird accent coming from the corner? Are you going to understand me, or am I? You going to subtitle this? Or
I think we got our wires crossed. There's like a Scottish person.
No, Mike. Today we have a guest in the studio. Today we have...
Oh, is that today?
That is today. You say that for everything. Today we have Stuart Scott Curran on the program.
I brought my bagpipes. I know how you love them.
Mm. You're what? This isn't going to work at all.
No, that might be for the best.
Okay.
You know? I'll just sit here and say stuff and you can pretend.
Hello,
you understand
Stuart.
Me. How's it going?
How are you?
I'm very well.
Excellent. It's good to have you on the show.
It's nice to be here.
So you are you're listening to Let's Make Mistakes right now.
That's true.
And I'm Mike.
And I'm Liam.
I'm Steph.
And I'm Stuart.
We've got Stuart Scott Curran.
So here's the thing. I was Stuart Curran. I married my wife Sarah Scott, and we didn't want to. She wasn't going to take my name, and I didn't want her to take my name. So we took each other's and we put them together, and it's like. What a mess, because everybody calls me Scott.
It's a total mess. Your name's a mess.
I think that's very cute, though.
Yeah, it was supposed to be cute. It kind of, you know, worked out. I love us being our own little family, but it causes trouble. People that I'd known for like 5-6 years started calling me Scott, and I'm like, I didn't change my first name. You know?
Well, it's especially confusing with you because you're Scottish, so...
Exactly.
That's what I'm thinking of when you see you coming anyway. It's
exactly.
Scott! So, and it turns out I'm partially right.
You are. You can call me whatever you want, Mike.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, Stuart. What are we talking about today?
So I heard that you gave a really good talk a few weeks ago.
We've been hearing about this.
Yeah, we've been hearing rumors about this amazing talk you gave a few weeks ago, so we want to know more about it.
Thank you. I gave a talk at Phoenix Design Week, and it was one of those, I'd been booked for it like 6 months or so ago. I'd been thinking about what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to do something new because I'd been doing the same thing for a little while. And I was working through it, thinking about it. And as time went on, there was just like nothing like really clicking. And then I put some stuff together, didn't really have an ending. And it was fine, but I just like wasn't really feeling it. And I got to Phoenix and I was just like, ah, fuck it. You know, like... There's a bunch of stuff that I've been thinking about. And
that's a Public Enemy song, by the way. By the time Stuart got to Phoenix.
So I threw everything out, just like sat in the hotel room the night before and just like wrote out what I was thinking about. And I was thinking about a bunch of stuff. I was thinking about community and how people interact with each other, with the technology that we have, and also... designers, and from my point of view, specifically San Francisco designers, kind of believe in their own hype a little bit in terms of like how they think what they do can change the world. And I've just felt that there's...
Disrupt.
Oh, exactly. Disrupt. We're going to disrupt.
Come on.
Yeah.
Don't Believe the Hype is another Public Enemy song.
You want to see how many Public Enemy songs we can work in today?
Fine. Sure.
All right.
We're playing that game now.
So I kind of like went on a little bit of a rant, you know, in front of a bunch of people, and some of them responded well to it, and some of them were a little bit more kind of, at one point I told the NRA to go fuck itself, forgetting that it was...
Yeah, we applaud you.
A red, that's still a red kind of gun-loving state.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah.
What are they going to do, shoot you?
Exactly.
Well. Oh, God.
I mean, 911 is a joke.
All right. Bingo. One for Mike. But yeah, so it was just felt like it was one of those things I kind of had to get off my chest, you know, and hadn't really been planning to do, but it's something I've been thinking more about, I guess.
You went to a design thing and you argued about the NRA.
I argued about the NRA and I argued about basically designing with empathy, you know, rather than just trying to make money or flip the company or whatever it is. And I figure if our healthcare systems had been designed with more empathy, we wouldn't be arguing about whether a woman has the right to choose what she does with her own body, which I talked about, you know, you know, our democracy had been designed with empathy, I wouldn't be worrying about dropping my kid off at school and wondering what she would do if somebody walked into her classroom with an AR-15, you know? And I think it comes back around to designers who, quote unquote, want to change the world, and they're designing a new way for to get dinner delivered to them, you know, mm-hmm. or get their laundry done, you know. And I just think that there's just shit above that which we need to be thinking about. But we just kind of like churn on our own hype, on our own stuff, you know, and we tell each other what we're doing is like making a real difference when, you know, is it really?
I think most people confuse changing the world with blocking our view of the world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to think about the rest of it. I just want somebody to pick up my mail. I want somebody to grab my dry cleaning.
Exactly. And
what can what can I get the world to do for me?
Exactly. It's what your mom used to do for you before you left house, before you left the house to go to college, you know?
Yep.
But I think, and I think about, you know, the impacts of those types of things. You know, if I'm going to design an app to pick up my laundry and bring it back to me, like nicely pressed, well, that there's an impact to that, perhaps on the local family-owned laundrette that's been on the corner street for the last 30 years, you know, who know their customers, know their preferences. You know, are they still going to be in business? Mm-hmm. You know, and we don't think about that stuff.
Well, there's two options. We either don't think about that stuff or we don't care.
Exactly.
We don't care is a fine option to consider.
I think.
Is it?
Well, not in like, that's a good idea, just in that I think that's a lot of what's going on, is people not giving a shit.
And I would also think that there's kind of this attitude, at least in San Francisco, where you're not going to make a life there. Or here, rather, you're just going to be here for a few years and move on. So, like, why do you give a shit if, like, the corner market's here for 30 more years? Like, fuck them.
Yeah, this city is being destroyed by people who aren't going to stay here.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, this is my 4 years in college type of thing.
Right.
Who gives a crap?
It's pretty, like, everybody I know who rents in the city, and that's almost everybody I knows that they're currently living in their last San Francisco apartment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like when they get kicked out or removed or whatever, or evicted from this apartment, they're going to have to leave the city. That's a really fucked up thing.
It is. And I feel like I'm battening down the hatches, like trying to weather out a storm that I don't know will ever end. And so if we have this epidemic of people who are designing without empathy, How do we change that? Like, how do we change the people who are trying to change the world? How do we get there?
I don't know. I think we just have to, it's, you know, I can go and get my $4 artisanal toast, you know, whilst.
It's delicious.
It is delicious, but I'm stepping over homeless people to get to it, you know? And, you know, human beings have a remarkable ability just to turn their back on stuff. And I don't know. I think people have to be affected by it personally. I think, you know, the stuff that's growing in San Francisco, it can't go on indefinitely, you would think, you know. But I think people just really need to start taking care of the stuff that's in their own backyard, you know. I think, like, this stuff feels really big. But if you start to get to know the people in your neighborhood, you know, get involved with some of the stuff that's going on a local level, I think you can start to, if enough people do that, you can start to make a difference. I don't know. But at the same time, you get continually fed by the companies that are hiring, like, come to us, you're going to change the world. You know, we are doing something extraordinarily special.
Let's talk about that phrase, change the world, because right. I'm a little tired of hearing it.
Yeah, me too.
Hitler changed the world.
Yes.
How far did we get in this recording before someone said Hitler?
11 minutes in.
11 minutes. Okay. That's, I think, a new record.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
That's decent.
Genghis Khan changed the world.
True.
It's neither, they're not really promising anything positive or negative. They're just promising that they're going to change it.
Yeah.
How? Right?
Yeah.
I will be a reordering force is what you're promising.
Right. Like, I want to help build a better world, like an easier world for all the people in it, a more fair world for all the people in it. I don't want to just change it.
Exactly. I want to try and leave some part of it better than it was before.
Right. And, you know, that could just mean, you know, like, in my own little two block area.
Right.
That's fine.
Absolutely.
I mean, I mean, teachers change the world every day. They do it for shit pay. And they go home feeling sick at the end of the day because they, you know, they're doing a hard-ass job and they're trying to corral 35 students per classroom and they're just trying to make it through. And the only reason that you would do something like that for as little pay as you actually get is because some part of you believes that that's a good and right thing to do.
Yeah. And I love that. I wonder how many teacher job pages you go and it says, come change the world. You know, yeah. They don't need that.
People who are actually changing the world rarely actually talk, like, it's not a goal.
Talk about it, yeah. Right.
It's not a goal for anybody. Most people just want to, go home. And then there's some bullshit that happens to them on the way home that keeps them from getting home. Steph?
Well, what I was going to say, like, what you're saying is they get crap pay. Like, teachers, people who actually make an impact change don't get paid well for doing it. To be in a place like this, you need to get paid well to, like, pay rent this month. So maybe it's just, like, a market that discourages people from actually helping and volunteering. Like, you could go get that startup job that's, like, changing the world in air quotes.
Teachers can't afford to live in the city anymore.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
I read something a while back that said they're, like, they looked at apartment listings on Craigslist for a few months, or I don't know, and compared the average there to the average teacher salary in the city, and there was nothing that a teacher could afford in the whole time that they were looking at that.
Yeah.
So if you actually want to be helping out the people who need help in this city, and there are a lot of them, you can't afford to live here.
No, absolutely.
Do we think this is kind of this idea about what you do can change the world in air quotes? Is that kind of a designer thing or does that like exist outside?
My feeling is it's trying to appeal to the people who have to take the high paying job but would rather be doing something meaningful but just can't afford the bottom line. It's just marketing, like trying to make your company sound like it's important.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it buys into the whole, like, weird. I remember this from the first web boom or whatever the fuck it was called. It's like, we're the new economy. We're changing everything. And in the end, I didn't do shit. We tried to sell cat litter online, which is a marvelous idea, and we used a puppet to do it.
Oh yeah, holy shit.
Yeah, and now it's like, hey, you know what? You can have a poor person pick you up in their car. And it's not really doing, it's all it's doing is making your life easier. You're already very easy life that much easier. So it's, I mean, so you get an incredibly high paying job to go work at a place that's making no actual money and has no actual value to the world other than some made up bullshit valuation. And in order to, and because you're making a ton of money doing that, it can prop up all of these other fake companies with these other stupid services that make your life easier so that you can spend more time at that bullshit company doing that bullshit job.
Not to mention, if you think that you're changing the world, it becomes a lot easier to pallet the hordes of ad hoc servants you have working under you because you're important.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, I mean, this is a human centipede of bullshit valuation.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Is this the title of the episode?
That's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Write it down.
No, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder how many designers actually show up to work like fully believing that, you know, the fact that they're making it easier to deliver dinner to somebody is really changing their world. And the price for that is something worth paying, you know? It's just a strange, maybe I'm just old. It's just a strange situation to me. I mean, I've been here like 2 years. It's like bizarro world.
It is bizarro world. And you go to the rest of the world, and it's not like this. I mean, the thing that frustrates me about San Francisco is you have the keys to the cage. Everyone living here has the keys to their own cage. We can leave.
I don't want to.
I know that you don't want to, and you shouldn't have to. But I mean, it's been really depressing to me to see this. I was part of the last group of assholes that ruined this city. I moved here in 99, so I'm not claiming to be like longtime San Francisco native. I was part of the last group that everyone hated and should have hated and hopefully still hates. And the city that I saw at that point was probably half as great as native San Franciscans already thought it was. But to me, it was this remarkable, incredible place with tons of freaks everywhere, everybody doing their own weird ass thing. And, you know, while it was kind of, it was pretty expensive, you could still find pockets of amazing stuff. And it was an incredibly liberal city. And I came here with a little kid and I really wanted to raise him here. And I'm glad I raised him here because, you know, he grew up like being very accepting of all different sorts of people, which he wouldn't have gotten, you know, where we were before. And it's turned from this, like, the last great liberal American bastion, Minneapolis doesn't count,
Minneapolis is lovely.
It really is, though. I'm kidding. It's turned from that into a libertarian bastion of greed. This is a city out of an Ayn Rand book. And the people who helped turn it that way should be fucking ashamed of themselves. They should be flogged somewhere. We should tie them to that giant pole in the middle of Union Square and just flog the hell out of them. I'm totally okay with flogging.
But I would say San Francisco is a city that is built on greed. Like, the 49ers didn't come out here just for funsies. Like, they came to make it rich.
True.
And I think that's kind of been the attitude that's always stuck around. There's just a different gold rush every time.
Yeah, this has always been a boom or bust city.
Yeah.
But I think this time we broke it.
No coming back.
So I want to preemptively address the comment I expect to get when this episode comes out, which is, this is politics. What does this have to do with design?
Everything.
Go on.
Design, if you do it right, is incredibly political. What you choose to work on and what you choose not to work on is a political act. who you choose to help and who you choose not to help is a political act. There's nothing special about design in that definition. If you're a lawyer and you choose to be a public defendant versus work at a firm, that's a political act. I mean, the shit that I hear designers talking about now, it's like some type of feeling special about shit. Like, I'm not asking you to be more political than anybody else. I'm just asking you to recognize that the decisions that you make are political.
Who you work for, what you do. I mean, I think there's kind of like what I've seen is like an accepted convention within designers, and working for someone like a cigarette company would be like a thing you probably shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? But at the same time, there's like a level below that in terms of like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, are you working on a product? Are you working on a marketing campaign? There's a political level to all of that stuff. And there's an impact to that, you know? And do you want to have some kind of a positive impact, or do you want to just like keep generating stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
that has a detrimental impact to other people? And I don't think we ask ourselves that question enough, you know.
I agree.
And so sometimes I catch myself going down like these dribble rabbit holes, or you know, through people's portfolios, and what I get as the biggest takeaway is there's just so much wasted talent in this town, like just beautiful designs, but it's like, this is like Pinterest, but you reskin it. It's Pinterest for recipes. Why would I not just use Pinterest where my recipes already are? It's just like reboots of the same existing stuff. Yeah. And if all of those people could, all this like great talent could like point it at something helpful.
It takes a hell of a lot of design and knowing the logistics and technical know-how to build a company that just delivers groceries to you, but there's 14 of those, and all of them are astoundingly well built for the narrow-minded idea that they turn out to be. I wish that we were using ourselves better.
So speaking of this bubble, I was just in Illinois last week, and I was talking to one of my good friends about how I had the flu, and I forgot that Instacart was a thing, so I didn't eat for a day until I remembered Instacart, and they brought me groceries. She's like, what the fuck is Instacart? It's like, it's like one of the grocery delivery services. Someone will deliver your groceries? Like, it's just this total mindset that we have right here, and I explained Washio, and that was like, why the hell can't you do your own laundry? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird being from here and like trying to figure out what it looks like from the outside, because I don't know. I grew up in the area. I grew up in the area during the first web boom. And so all of this is like kind of normal for me. And so that like outside perspective is so interesting.
So I spent a lot of time online arguing with people.
Yes.
Do you?
Didn't notice.
I can do it here, too.
he argues out loud with us while having arguments with people online.
And lately, I've been arguing about guns a lot.
Because
mm-hmm. guns are foul, filthy, stupid things for morons. And here in America, we argue about it. I don't understand what the fuck there is to argue about.
Me either.
And then I'll go to somewhere else. Like, I was just in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly pleasant, beautiful place. Met some really nice people. And they're like, what the fuck is the problem with you people and guns?
It's the weirdest thing.
And you realize that there are places out there that have their shit together. And you're just sitting here arguing about like really insane, stupid stuff that you shouldn't have to be arguing about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really depressing.
It is really depressing. It hit me the other day that this is weird to me as an American, but it shouldn't be weird. There are lots of places where the cops don't carry guns. And so you could conceivably reach adulthood never having seen a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
But as a child in America, You know exactly. You've seen deadly weapons before because you've seen a police
officer. I see them every day.
Yeah.
I've seen, I see guards at fucking Target.
Yeah.
With guns. Yeah. Why the fuck does the guard at Target have a gun?
Ain't nothing that good at Target.
What the fuck am I going to steal in at Target that would justify me getting shot?
Yeah, it's strange.
And the only reason they have a gun is because they're afraid somebody else is going to come in there with a gun.
Exactly.
And it's just this self-fulfilling escalation of idiocy. And we could all just not do it.
I grew up around guns in the UK. My dad shot guns. He would go to the shooting club every Friday night, and he would do his target shooting, the type of stuff that they do in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had like a couple of guns at home. He had a 357 Magnum at home, but it was locked up. He had to have a permit. He had to get that permit renewed every single year. Twice a year, the police would show up at our door, like unannounced, and check to see if those were stored properly and that the ammunition was in a different place. And if it wasn't, they would get taken away.
Good call.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why stuff like that isn't possible. And then 16 kids were shot in a school, and then they took all the guns away. And they gave him some money, and it was like, yeah, okay, fine.
So what did your dad think of that?
He was kind of like, well, you know, this isn't really my fault, you know, but that's fine. I'm not going to stock up in a bunker somewhere and have him like...
So he, I mean, true, not his fault, but he understood that, like, that was enough. Like, that moment that, was like, exactly. Okay, as a society, we're done with this shit.
That's fine, and I am perfectly happy to give this stuff up so that shit like that doesn't happen.
So why can't we do that?
I think
why the fuck wasn't Sandy Hook when we decided we were done?
Exactly.
Like, how many fucking kids have to die before we decide, you know what? Whether we have a right to it, whatever the fuck the Constitution says, I just don't want these anymore. I'm fine getting rid of these because I don't want to see any more pictures of dead kids.
Until, you know, people like the NRA perpetuate this like culture of fear.
Fuck the NRA.
Absolutely fuck the NRA.
Motherfuck the NRA two times.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the shit that we should be working on.
Fucking domestic terrorist organization.
Yeah, it's like a countdown to Armageddon, you know? Thank you.
Got another one.
Man, that's good. That's like four now.
That was the kind of the point of like what I was saying at that talk. Like, this is the shit that we should be working on. You know, this is the stuff that we should be talking about and addressing and working to dismantle. You know, but until we get the money out of that system, I don't know where you go. This country is weird. It's so partisan. It's like I lived in Holland for 10 years, and the political system is the dullest thing in the world. And that's the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Nobody hates Americans as much as the other Americans. It's true.
Exactly.
It's like the entire world hates us, but half of us hate the other half so much more.
It's a really weird thing.
Well, we got rid of some guns this week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
We, so the other day, somebody tweeted at me that, there was a campaign on Kickstarter.
Indiegogo.
Kickstarter explicitly does not allow weapons. Bless them for that. And it turns out that Indiegogo doesn't either.
Oh.
So they alerted me to an Indiegogo campaign for a company making what they call the salt gun. And it was like a weird-ass paintball gun that shot some chemical thing. And the idea was that it was so safe that you could leave it out in the open in your house so that you could get to it and so that you could use it on an intruder. And it created like a chemical barrier that the intruder couldn't penetrate. I don't know what kind of slow motion universe these fuckers are living on, but apparently you shot it. It created a barrier. You waited there. You got stunned. You passed out. I don't know. But it's supposedly non-lethal. Now, I'm not sure you could call something non-lethal when it's shot at you at 50 miles an hour. I don't care what it is. But this, and they were clearly calling it a gun. And so I went digging through the terms of use for Indiegogo, and it said that you cannot give as a perk something that is designed to hurt other people. And I tweeted that out, and I filed a report with Indiegogo, and the next day it was gone.
The weird thing to me about that was they were marketing it as not a gun, but it looked exactly like a gun.
They were calling it a gun. The title was Salt Gun.
Salt Gun. But it was like, here's a non-lethal alternative
but to
a gun.
But it was designed to look...
exactly like a gun.
Terrifying. It was designed to look like... Not like a defend you, like, nice, shiny tool to have in your home. It looked like a killing machine. Because, honestly, it is.
So... Here's the problem that I the way I see it. I have absolutely no problem with the idea of defending your family. You should be able to defend your family. But so if you take that as a problem statement and you figure out, okay, what's the best way to defend my family? You could come out like the other side of that problem. This any number of possible solutions could come out of there, and none of them would be a gun.
Right.
I think the way this argument is happening now is, you know, solve X for gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know, so the end result of this needs to be a gun.
It's moral algebra.
Right.
And what I think was a big issue too is the whole, like, you can just have it out. It can be around children. It's that safe. Like, if, you know, someone shot their brother in the face with that, it's going to do damage. Like, no gun is safe.
If part of their design had been, here's how we can make this completely safe for you to have, instead of just being like, it won't kill you, you can just leave it around.
Probably won't kill you.
Yeah, that's a horrible decision. As if you're trying to design something to defend anyone, like, step one is make sure it can't hurt you on accident.
Something that's designed to kill is never not going to be able to kill.
Right.
It's impossible to make it safe.
It's for not being safe.
Right.
Don't worry. It'll harm the intruders, but not your kids. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why they were designed, right? They were designed in order to kill people.
Yeah. That's what they're doing, what they're designed to do. So I think, like, as designers, as people who, you know, look at problems and figure out ways to solve them, I think this is something that we can do. And if we take a look at you know, say a problem like, how do I protect my family? And take that on as an actual problem and leave the solution end of that totally open, where, you know, the answer could be the answer is like an honest result of going through the problem statement and with some good research and some good strategy, which we all know how to do, and figure out what the possible outcomes of that. I don't think you're going to get a gun out of that scenario. And I think, I mean, the problem with America right now is that America demands a gun at the other end of that equation. And until we're open to solving those problems morally and intellectually, honestly, we're fucking doomed. This is a feel-good show.
This is a good one.
This is a feel-good show.
This is one for the ages. Can we put crafted with love on whatever the solution is?
Yeah, lovingly crafted.
Lovingly crafted.
Lovingly crafted. Oh. Is there hope? Are we going to be okay?
There's always hope.
Okay. You think?
Well, no.
Okay. Great. Fantastic.
Because Greenland's melting.
Greenland is melting.
And by the time if the ice in Greenland were to completely melt, the oceans would be 20 feet higher than they are today.
My house is like a foot above sea level.
I'm going to be beachfront. This is going to be awesome.
No, you're not.
I don't know. I'm on the hill next to the ocean.
She can have a perfect view of my floating corpse.
Tiff can come over and have boba. It'll be cool.
I love that you assume she survives.
But not him.
But not me. I'm definitely dead. My girlfriend, though, fine. See how it is. I hope it will be okay. I hope that we can make progress on these things. I hope that we can learn to design with empathy, and I hope that I don't know. I hope that we can let go of some fear and let go of some over pride.
I'm buying a boat.
You're buying a boat?
I am. I'm buying a boat. Well, I guess, is it a boat or a ship? At what point does it become a ship? I'm a terrible Portuguese. I should know this.
How big's your boat? What you looking at?
I don't know. I'm going to buy, like, my plans have changed from buy a house to buy a boat. Because the amount of land on Earth is decreasing and the amount of water is increasing. And I'm playing the odds. I'm buying a boat.
It makes total sense. You've got some time to build it.
Well, I'm going to build it.
Well, that's an arc.
You're assuming I'd want other people on the boat.
True. One or two people sized arc. Three people and a dog, maybe. A couple more. I don't know.
I assumed you just wanted a bunch of animals on it. No other people.
What kind of animals would you put on your boat?
My boat?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tough question. I like a lot of animals.
Capybara.
Oh, a quokka? It would cheer me up.
Capybara are great swimmers, you know.
Oh, then it doesn't need to be on the boat. It's just wasting space.
And they're fish.
Technically.
What?
Capybara are technically fish.
According to the Catholic Church, they are fish.
But they have hair. Mm. They're mammals.
Are you not familiar with rodents. The cat? Do you not know about this? Seriously?
No, I'm really, this is all news to me. They're the largest rodent. I went to the zoo.
They're also delicious fishes.
What country was this, Liam?
I'm not sure.
Was it Colombia?
I don't know either.
Could have been Colombia.
It was one of those South American countries that, being raised in the American educational system, I'm too ignorant to know the difference between. But it was a mainly Catholic country, and because, you know, they do the fish on Friday during Lent thing. But capybara was like their main food staple, so they asked the Vatican to have capybara declared a fish.
Are you thinking of like guinea pigs or chinchillas? Because
no,
they're in South America.
Mm-hmm.
Did at any point did I make it sound like I was confused about this?
I just didn't know there were capybara in South America. I thought they were like elsewhere.
I think that's where they are.
Okay. I was thinking about the guinea pigs, where they put them in little costumes and they have a costume parade and then they like roast them.
Do you size that up?
You're thinking about your basement.
How did you know?
Wow, that's weird.
So weird. What is this episode?
Oh, it's been a weird week.
Oh, it has.
I've had a great week.
You've had a great week?
I've had a great week.
You foiled a gun. What else did you do?
I foiled a gun. I published a couple of things.
Oh, you did. That's true. Wrote some stuff. The end of list?
That's enough.
All right. That's good enough.
I mean, that's good enough, right?
That's pretty good.
Got interviewed for some fancy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah. So wait. Stuart.
Yes.
You run Creative Mornings in San Francisco.
Yes.
Are you gonna, the last thing I might post it.
Are you going to give this talk at Creative Mornings?
I am not allowed to because I am the host and I'm not allowed to talk at my own event. However, Jennifer Daniel gave a very similar type of talk just last week, which was really interesting.
You're not allowed to talk at your own event?
No.
All right, I'll make you a deal.
Yeah.
You should quit. I'll take over.
Okay.
I'll run the event that you speak at, and then I'll quit.
Okay, perfect.
And then you take over again.
Let's do that.
That work for you? Does
absolutely.
Does that clear? That's such a Putin move.
Oh, yeah.
That's a total Vladimir Putin move. So you quit so that you can talk, and then I'll quit.
Okay.
All right.
Done deal.
So do you want to you want to announce here what date you'll be giving that talk at Creative Mornings?
No.
If you don't announce it right now, you're not going to do it.
I'm going to let Jennifer's get out there first because she said it like way better than I ever could.
I'm sorry I missed that, by the way.
Yeah, really it was really great. We'll have it up for you to see like pretty soon.
I was in Norway when it happened.
Yeah. I mean, she was great. She was saying like designers changing the world, they can't even fix San Francisco, you know?
They can't even change the toilet paper when it's out.
Exactly.
Is there an app for that?
I work with designers. They don't know how to change a printer cartridge.
Right.
Printers are arcane.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even know how to reset the abacus.
So, can you tell us what's coming up for Creative Mornings?
Creative Mornings, we're trying to do like a bunch of stuff which like goes beyond people just standing up and showing work or, you know, hopefully making people inspired.
I hate the work talks.
Yeah.
I fucking hate the work talks.
What do you prefer?
Here's my portfolio, and then I did this, and then I did this. I want to know why you did that. I want to know what drives people. I want to hear people yelling. I like hearing people yelling.
And I've generally tried to avoid people just to get up and showing that stuff. So we want to do more. Hopefully, people talking about things that actually matter. You know, I'm trying to figure out how we like get more people actually connecting like beyond just that event, you know, can we actually like make projects happen, collaborations happen? I don't know. We've started doing like workshops, you know, all sorts of different types of things. So I'm just trying to like somehow solidify the community here rather than just have it be show up for coffee and breakfast.
Do you think there's a design community here?
I think there is a design community. It feels like I see a lot of the same faces like show up to these
feces?
Things.
Did you say feces? Design feces.
That's my accent. Yeah. My accent again. We have a lot of people that come together and actually love doing that and being part of it. I'm not sure if you'd label it design or just like some people that kind of give a crap, you know. Hopefully they do. I just want to try and push that as far as we can. What do you think? You've been here longer. Do you think there's such a thing as like a design community?
No.
Okay.
Really?
I really do. I think there's a tech community.
Right.
I think designers see themselves as a subset of that community.
Yeah.
That's fair. I think they see themselves as servants of that community.
Yeah.
And I think they're afraid of not being a part of that community.
Because that's what pays their bills.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair.
I know, and it's a shame because there are some good designers and there's some very good designers in this town, but they don't really want to stand up as designers. They, you know, everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. It's like the role from being an inexperienced designer to a semi-experienced designer, and now I'm an entrepreneur. I don't know what the fuck that means.
I think that means fancy unemployed.
Yeah. I think people here are after wealth and which is fine. I'm a big fan of wealth. I would love some. But they honestly don't give a shit how they get it.
Right.
I think San Francisco is currently a city without a moral center.
Let's see if you're after wealth. Just like fucking own it. Stop saying that you're going to try to change the world.
Yeah, just fucking say it. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. I'm going to get rich and then I'm going to go like live
in
Seattle.
I'm here to get rich, do coke, and then take off. I would have so much respect for somebody who is just willing to say that.
Yeah. Be like, that person has their shit together. They know what they want.
Wow. That's pretty terrifying. That sounds like an improvement to us.
Well, I mean, as opposed to like the jerk off motion, like I'm disrupting this industry.
I see a lot of great things happening at AOL these days, and being acquired by AOL, I think is a really good opportunity for us. I've heard that sentence.
I know. I've read it many times. It sounds like something that you type with one hand, while with the other hand you're just fanning through just a stack of money.
You know, all we ever really wanted was to be acquired by a bank.
Oh, I know people like that.
Actual fucking sentence.
Yeah. I'm very excited that Yahoo is going to take over our product, given their great track record.
Or just, you know, people who make shit so Salesforce will buy them. Salesforce will buy anything. Like,
being, you know, joining Yahoo is really going to allow us to scale what we're offering.
Fuck scale.
Small is good.
Small is nice. Bigger you get, the easier it is to trample somebody.
It worries me that the goal of people starting things is so that they can be acquired by a bank. Mm-hmm. You know, that's ultimately some of the problem, right?
I bought this place. I mean, I started this place so I could come to work.
Right.
And not hate it. And I figure as long as I'm coming to work and not hating it, I'll keep this place around. If one day I just hate it too many days in a row, because there are days I hate it. But if I start hating it too many days in a row, then I'll just stop coming.
Steph, we got to be nicer to Mike.
Yeah. Our severance is just going to be all the Kallax shelves.
No, I'll just stop.
Two Kallax per person.
No, you can run it.
Okay.
Do you actually really need me here?
I don't know. You seem to know some stuff.
Well, I would... It would be nice to be treated better then.
We're sorry. Pepto-Bismol.
Pepto-Bismol tastes terrible in whiskey, by the way.
I could soak it in some vodka for you.
Oh, that would be better, actually.
Yeah. Do you want to, like, a boozy bear to wash that down?
I'm sure that there's a sorority drink that's Pepto-Bismol and vodka.
That's gross.
I actually think that would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Maybe no, tequila and Pepto-Bismol. You won't get any weird like fire burps. So. Anyways.
I think that's called a uterus ejector.
What?
What the fuck? What happened?
I don't know.
I'm glad we've turned it around from talking about fucking the NRA to like this is the comedic relief.
Fuck the NRA.
Part of our programming.
Fuck the NRA. Oh Jesus.
If we should make a site where people could send in videos. Just say fuck the NRA.
All right. Do we own fuckthenra.org or anything like that?
Not yet.
Somebody took the domain I was going to buy, which was NRA.RIP.
Mm.
Oh,
right. That's such a good TLD. Nice.
Oh. Who's got it?
I don't know who's got it, but
let's find out.
I really wanted that.
Maybe we can get it.
Wait, should I talk about my big idea on here?
What big
idea? Is everyone going to do it?
Just talk about it.
And I'm just going to talk about it because someone else can do it for me.
We might cut it.
Okay, that works. You know, like the story you told us about, you know, his brother, what your memories are, describe it to your children. So then after that, he came up with a...
It's not a bad idea for a site.
Right?
It's a great idea for a site.
I might build it Sunday.
We should edit that out.
Okay, yeah. It's really... Okay. Is Seth going to make us really cool music for when he cuts that?
Oh God, I hope so.
Please? Maybe like Benny Hill music?
NDA music.
Just Tina going...
Hey, let's end the show that way.
Okay.
Okay.